Welcome to this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. I'm Trista Polo from iwokeupawesome.com, and I am your host. Each week, we learn the story behind that vanity plate. You know the one you saw driving down the road? What did it say? What did it mean? Why did they choose it? This week, we meet Angelina Vale of Rosendale, New York. Her plate, Avail Me, represents her as a proud, full-time transgender female. She's the chairwoman of the Mid-Hudson Valley Transgender Association, as well as regional manager of a large healthcare corporation, and owner of Hudson Valley Handy Girl, a home maintenance and remodeling business. Through her life, starting from a young age, she faced a lot, but she has come through full of energy and life. She is truly happy and living her life on purpose. Angelina painted her house the colors of the rainbow to stand against hatred and bigotry. Please share Angelina's plate story and subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can also check out the video version of this week's episode to see pictures of Angelina's rainbow home. Join me for this special Pride Month episode. Now let's go get to know Angelina. Good morning and welcome to Trista's Plate Story Podcast. I'm so excited to have Angelina Vale Boros with us today. Her license plate is Avail Me. Welcome, Angelina.
Thank you, Trista. I'm very excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you on Trista's Plate Story Podcast. Now, your plate, Avail Me, has a couple of versions of the story. So let's hear the official version first.
Okay. So the official version goes like this. Back in 2011, I met this woman, Bernadette. And obviously, I'm transgender. And I've always been attracted to women in a feminine way. Always wanted to emulate them. And the more feminine they appeared, the more I wanted to be one. Every time I met a female, I was always very careful how I presented this side of myself to them, because if I felt any hint whatsoever of rejection or anything, I would just close it down. So the little hints I threw out to Bernadette, she was totally accepting. So with her guidance and help and love and compassion and empathy, she took me out on the town one night as a female. We went down to see a concert in Brooklyn, John Cale. And so what I was doing prior to this was I would meet transgender people, cross dressers and stuff like that. I didn't want this part of me to be known on Facebook with all my friends and family, so to speak, because it was still pretty secretive. So I created an alter personality. And I spoke to Bernadette about that, and we both love the name Angelina, and Vale is her last name, her legal last name. So in honor of her accepting this side of me and empowering that side of me, I took her last name as part of my screen name and Facebook name, so Angelina Vale. So I was still living as a guy. I'm still working that way, but with her guidance and acceptance in my life, I would go out with her occasionally as a female on weekends. And it became more and more and more. So I figured at some point I was going to move forward with this, but I was still in a very early stage. I had no idea how this was going to pan out. Around 2012, maybe 2013, I wanted to get a vanity plate on my car to sort of express my new persona.
How long had you been going out and dressing like a woman and having your Facebook profile before you decided to have the vanity plate?
Maybe about a year or so. I mean, I've known about this since I was a child.
Okay.
But I had to suppress it and hide it from everybody in the world, because I was raised in a very old-fashioned Greek and Italian family, and I didn't know as a child what it was. I just know children know what they like.
Yeah.
They might not know how they like it or why they like it or the reasoning behind it. They just know that they like what they like.
That's right.
And I was always drawn to females and femininity for whatever reason. Didn't matter. And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I came up with Avail Me, because what that meant back then was Angelina Vale is me. I didn't want the world to know it yet. I didn't really think ahead that at some point, people are going to start asking me about what does that mean?
Right.
The first person to do that, I worked for a large healthcare company. And my boss, Steve, at the time, great man. I mean, a total accepting, loving person. And he saw my license plate and he said, "Avail me? What does that mean?" He totally caught me off guard. And now I'm the type of person, I love helping people. I've always loved helping people. I love always giving back and doing whatever I can for people.
Yeah.
So I told him, I said, I make myself available to people for any number of reasons to help them out. And he said, "All right." I don't think he believed it, but that was the end of the conversation. And my brother was the second one to ask me about that. And I told him the same thing. I didn't really think too much about it. At this point, I was living my life more and more as a female. On Friday nights, I would start getting ready, doing my nails and all of that stuff. And Saturday, I'd make plans with Bernadette. We'd go here and we'd go there, or I'd go to a club. And so I started to venture out more and more as a female back then. So that's where the license plate came in for Avail Me. And to this day, obviously, I still have it. It's still me, only I don't live in the shadows anymore.
Yeah. Angelina shared next about her journey to transition and coming out to her boss and family.
I transitioned. I started to go on hormones in 2015. Well, let me explain about that. So one day, Bernadette and I were at my house, and it was probably late 2014. And she saw how much I used to struggle with this and feel ashamed and guilty about it. Bernadette and I were a couple back then. We were dating. And one day she saw how much I was feeling shameful and guilty about this. So she just held me and she looked at me and she said, "Listen," she said, "you have to stop torturing yourself." She said, "This is a part of you, whether you like it or not. It's always been a part of you. It'll always be a part of you. You really need to embrace it." And I thought about that. And at the same time in my life, I was thinking about the future. I was contemplating what my life is going to be like when I'm older. So it coincided with what she was telling me. And I would picture myself on that proverbial rocking chair later on in life when I'm like 80 years old, wherever I am, sitting on the front porch in that rocking chair, rocking back and forth. And as I'm sitting there in that rocking chair, the sun's going down. I'm looking over my life. And when that day really comes, I want to know in my heart that there weren't any major regrets. Because once we're sitting in that rocking chair, it's game over. Right. There's no going back and changing things. Yeah. So I thought about that at the same time she told me about embracing this part of myself. And I decided to move forward with it. And we talked about it, and I went and contacted a gender therapist. I got put on hormones in 2015, and in 2018, I had my gender reassignment surgery. And it's really funny because I did think about how this was going to impact and affect my life at work, because I got a good career. Mm. I have a side business, a home remodeling and maintenance side business, and how I was going to navigate my way around the country in this new life, and if people were going to accept it or right. not. Now, mind you, I'm not the kind of person who allows others to dictate to me what I can and cannot do, yes. where I can and cannot go, who I can and cannot be. But it would have a financial impact on me, per se. And that was concerning because I do own my own house. I don't want to lose it. Aside from that, I went ahead and did it. I came out at work to my boss, Steve. He totally accepted it without hesitation.
That's awesome.
He took me and our department out to lunch so I could tell all the people in my department. They were all accepting. So the road ahead was not as bumpy thus far as I thought it would be. I am a regional manager at my company, the only transgender person I know in my company of over 1,500 people, much less a manager. I manage the maintenance and security of a dozen medical facilities. I've been doing it for 11 years, and my side business, my home maintenance and remodeling business, has never been busier. I can hardly keep up with all the work.
That's awesome.
And I get most of my work from recommendations, and I travel a lot, and I have my Avail Me plates all over the place. People do ask me about that. What does that mean? And when I tell them, I say, And a couple of things I love about being transgender and meeting new people that don't know anything about a transgender person is that I get to educate them. I get to let them know that I'm not an alien. I am still a person that does good, that helps other people, that loves my life. I add goodness to the planet, but I'm happy. I'm a happier version of myself. I said, and just to think about all the people on this planet who want to be happy with who they are, but they can't be for any number of reasons. Whether the community they live in thinks it's immoral, whether they think it's illegal. And the problem with that is any community, any country that keeps their people from being happy is actually setting themselves up for failure. Because when you have a whole section of society that's unhappy, there's going to be some kind of unrest, and it's going to kick back to society. So I am very adamant that I don't let anything or anybody stand in the way of my happiness. It took me a long time to get here, so I can't afford to let anybody get in the way of my happiness, and I don't allow society or anybody to dictate to me who I can and can't be.
I love that. It takes a lifetime for most people to be able to be comfortable with themselves, like truly comfortable with themselves, who they are, how they show up, and owning their greatness.
Yeah. You
know, I think that we all struggle with having the courage to really be ourselves. And I'd go so far as to say that most of us don't have as far to go as you did.
Yeah.
And so I really acknowledge you for owning your self, like who you really are.
It takes a lot of courage, but I think that what comes across to a lot of people is they come to respect that, the struggle.
Angelina spoke next about her struggles growing up, which led to challenges with addiction and incarceration.
I knew about this since I was a child, and I struggled with this, and I had to hide this and suppress it, and it created a lot of anxiety. Growing up, hiding this. I mean, I had women's clothes hidden everywhere. In my bedroom, in the crawl space, in the woods, in buildings, in town. I can't even begin to tell you how frustrating and the amount of anxiety. And also, I had an immense case of ADHD. I mean, I was super hyperactive. So much so that people used to get tired just watching me as a kid. And what was cute as a child, when I started to go to school, I couldn't shut up, I couldn't sit still, and I couldn't pay attention. Physiologically and physically, I couldn't do it. And in first grade, my teacher, Mrs. Hess, she used to tape my mouth shut and slap me and pull my hair because I couldn't sit still and shut up and pay attention. And I was a five-year-old acting like a five-year-old, and I was getting beat up for it. When my parents, I never told them because, well, they're the teachers, they must be right. When I was a child, there was no diagnosis for ADHD. It was a behavioral problem.
Right.
And I got hit by quite a few of my teachers, and this was public school. My brother and my two sisters went to Catholic school. If they would have sent me to Catholic school, they would have murdered me. So yeah. School was a horror show to me. And growing up, I mean, I started getting into alcohol and drugs at an early age because I was self-medicating. And that blossomed into a full-blown addiction. I ended up spending over 13 years of my life in a variety of state prisons and in rehabs because I was a complete stranger to myself. The only thing I felt like was a functioning piece of flesh. I did not feel connected to myself. I felt completely disconnected from myself.
Yeah.
The only feelings I really felt were anger. I never felt good. I was never proud of myself or happy with myself because I was never accomplishing anything to be happy or proud of myself. And I feel so horrible for the anguish that I put all my family through growing up like that. But they never told me to go to hell. They never told me to leave the house and get out. They loved me through it all, you know?
Which
and
is so, amazing.
It is. And the last time that I got in trouble was in 1994. It was a burglary for drugs. It was in Nassau County on Long Island. It was January. It was just horrible. It was definitely the worst depressing time of my life. And I know I was going to go to prison for quite a while this time, that they were going to throw the keys away on me. So I wrote the judge a letter and I poured my life out to him, like two pages full of stuff. Like, judge, I'm not bad. I just don't know why. I know I'm hooked to drugs, but I'm a good person. I have a good heart. When I went before the judge in March of 1994, I had very little hope in myself. because this is now my third time going away to prison.
Yeah.
And he looked at me, and I was 32 years old at the time. He said, "You're still not too old to go away and get your life together." And I like looked at this guy, and I couldn't believe what he was saying. He had more hope and faith in me at that moment than I had in myself. And he gave me 8 years to life. That was the minimum sentence allowable by law. And he could have given me up to 15 years to life. Wow. But he gave me the minimum. And at that moment, I made a decision. I was going to be determined to go away and get my life together. So I went away, and I'm upstate in Auburn prison. I enrolled in college. I was going to Syracuse University. I went to start to see a psychologist to get inside my head to figure out what the hell is going on and get to the bottom of my problems with my life, because I didn't want to die in prison. Yeah. And this psychologist is listening to me, and he's listening to me, and he says, "Wait a minute." He says, "Number one, slow down, because I can't hear as quickly as you're talking." number two, "Did anybody ever diagnose you with ADHD? I didn't even know what that was. I said, "No." He says, "Well, I'm going to send you over to the psychiatrist." So he does that. And the psychiatrist is listening to me, and he takes my whole history into account. He says, "You definitely have ADHD. Fine." So he prescribes Ritalin. In the meantime, I was a trustee in prison. I was in this thing called honor block, where if you're doing really well and you're trusted, they put you in this really, I don't know how to say it, but this decent cell block. Better, bigger cells and all this stuff. So one day I was cleaning the visitors area up in front of the jail, and I'm sweeping, and I look down, I see this plastic child's toy key. So I take the key, put it in my pocket. Anything we find, we're supposed to give to the guards, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, when I'm done with my job, we always get patted down before they let us leave. And the guard pats me down, doesn't feel the key. I totally forgot I had it. I'm almost back to my cell when they called yard recreation. So I immediately turn around, I'm going down the steps, and down at the bottom in the foyer, there's always a contingent of officers and a sergeant doing random pat frisks, just to make sure that no weapons or drugs are being brought out to the yard. Anyway, as I'm getting down there, I realize I have this stupid key in my pocket. So I take it out, and I put it between my fingers, because right outside the cell block is a sewer. It's going right down the sewer. Now, mind you, I've been in this prison for about 8 months at the time. They all know I work in the front. They all know I'm a trustee and all this stuff. Never had a problem. Never got picked for a random pack first before. And all of a sudden, I'm down in the foyer. The sergeant says, "You, get up against the wall." I said, "Oh, boy." Just as I raise my hands, the sergeant comes over and says, "What's that?" And he pulls this key out from between my fingers. And he says, "Oh, a handcuff key." I said, "No, I found this." He didn't want to hear it. Now, let me tell you something. The last thing you want to get caught with in a maximum security prison is anything that even could be fashioned or made to believe that it's a handcuff key. So anyway, he lets me go out to the yard. While I'm out to the yard, unbeknownst to me, is they tear up my jail cell. I mean, they destroy it looking for whatever else, because now they think there's some kind of a conspiracy going on, that I was going to give this key to somebody, I'm planning an escape, blah, blah, blah. When I come back in from the yard, my cell is tore up. The next morning, when all the gates are open for people to go to work, mine doesn't open. I said, "Oh, boy." And then they hand me this piece of paper, which is a superintendent's hearing, which is the worst one you can get in a prison, right? It's for escape paraphernalia. So I said, "Oh, my God." So I figured, listen, I'm going to go to the hearing. I'm going to talk to the lieutenant. I'm going to tell him what happened. It was a mistake. I just forgot. The guard didn't find it. And he's going to give me a warning. They gave me a year in solitary confinement for that key.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, mind you, let me back up just a little bit. While I was in the county jail after sentencing, feeling so horrible and destitute, I heard the officer said religious services in 15 minutes. Now, I'm not much of a religious person. But when I was feeling so bad and so almost depressed, we naturally gravitate towards anything that'll make us feel better. So I went down to the service, and while I was sitting there, the chaplain says, "Maybe the only reason that you're in jail is the only place that God could get your undivided attention." And that hit me like a lightning bolt, because while I was in society, obviously I was out of control with the drugs, with the drinking, with the negative lifestyle. And that really had a big impact on me. And then with the judge having faith in me when I had no faith in myself, I don't know why, but I sensed that there was more going on with this time away than previously. There was something in the works here. I just couldn't put my finger on it, and it was just a thought at the time. So now getting sentenced to a year in solitary confinement and being in solitary confinement, I started to do something I could never have done without being in that cell 24 hours a day. Think about myself. Because every other time in my life that I was with myself, I didn't think anything good. And I always made it a point to be around other people, doing things, getting high, drinking, just to take the focus off myself, numbing myself and what have you.
Avoidance, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But now I didn't have a choice. I had to face my demons. The last thing I wanted to do. Well, now that the psychiatrist diagnosed me with ADHD, and the next time I went to see the psychiatrist, he says, "Go to the school district," because I told him all the things that they did to me in school. At the end of sixth grade, there's this thing called field day, that all the kids are outside, they're playing all these games and everything. They made me go back into the school by myself and count all the tiles on the floor. At lunchtime, they made me sit by myself. Everybody else got two hamburgers, heaping loads of French fries and soda. They gave me one hamburger. I mean, this was terrible, treating me like this. When something that was out of my control. Anyway, the psychiatrist says, well, maybe if the school would have did something more than punish you, your whole life might have been different. You might not have spent a day of your life in jail. Your family might not have had to go through everything they did. So after he said that, and I went back to my cell, I started to get real angry at the school district. And I started to locate lawyers, and I wanted to sue the school district. Not because I wanted any money. Money had nothing to do with it. What it had to do with everything to do with another child never having to go undiagnosed and going through what I did in life. And another family never having to go through what I went through and what I put them through. I got letter after letter after letter. We don't handle that stuff. I mean, no lawyer really wants to handle an inmate, and much less have a lawsuit against a school district where an inmate is concerned. I started writing away to find out more about ADHD. So one day in the mail, I get this pamphlet, and it's from CHAD, Children with Attention Deficit Disorder. So I'm skimming through it, and I come across this little advertisement from this attorney on Long Island, and surprisingly, her office was like within miles of where I lived. So I contacted her, and I wrote her a 4-page letter pouring my life and my heart out to her. I had my sister contact her. So next thing, here I am sitting in solitary. The sergeant comes to my cell, and he says, "You have to call your lawyer." And I was almost going to refuse because I don't know what he was talking about. And I said, "Okay." Now, mind you, every time you come out of your cell in solitary confinement, they put handcuffs on you. They put this black box in between the handcuffs and a chain around your waist so you can't move. They shackle your ankles. It's horrible. It was a horrible experience. So they take me to this room, and I call this lawyer, and it happens to be this woman lawyer that I wrote to, the 4 pages. She had told me later on that she never, ever, ever handled an inmate's case before. Every time she ever got a letter from an inmate, it went right into the garbage. She never even opened it. She said, "I don't know what it was about you, but when I saw your handwriting, I knew something. Something prompted me to open that letter." And then when I read those 4 pages and speaking to your sister, she not only decided to take the case I was in solitary for, but she beat it.
Wow.
She beat it. And we got married in prison 1 year later. So for the next 7 years, she came up and seen me every weekend and holiday for 7 years.
Wow.
And visit after visit after visit after visit, we took Humpty Dumpty and put Humpty Dumpty back together again. There wasn't a facet or area in my life,
wow,
physically, mentally, emotionally or spiritually, that we didn't talk about and work on.
Amazing.
In most cases, with probably 99.9% of the people that go into solitary, they either come out the same or worse. Solitary confinement saved my life because it afforded me the time to to get inside of myself, which never would have happened if I was not in solitary.
Yeah. It gave you time to reflect.
Spend all of that time introspecting and getting inside of my head and my heart. And a lot of people don't know this. And I realized this in solitary, like I realized a lot of things in solitary, was that there was a vast separation between what my mind wanted and what my heart wanted. I managed to bring them together and have them work in tandem instead of my mind wanting to do one thing and my heart wanting to do something else. So my time spent in solitary was necessary for me. And when I got out and when I moved in with her, my life started to come together like it never was before. It was organized. I was doing things legally, wasn't doing drugs, drinking. And we stayed together. We were married for 10 years. We separated in 2010. And then I met Bernadette onto the second phase of my life, where now my true happiness was coming into play. I've never been so happy or successful. I own my own home. I have a career that I absolutely love. I have a business that's absolutely thriving. And it's funny too, because I do a lot of traveling, a lot of times by myself, because prior to me knowing who I was, I never wanted to spend time with myself, ever. But now I love spending time with myself because I'm at peace with myself, because my spirit has been freed. I know exactly who I am, and that's why I'm so adamant about never letting anybody get in the way of disrupting or derailing my happiness. And me and Bernie, although we're not a couple anymore, we're even closer now than we were before, because we're the best of best friends. I tell people as often as I can, don't let anything or anybody get in the way of who you are and your happiness.
Yeah.
No, because when you're sitting in that rocking chair later on in life, having regrets, it's not going to be pretty.
Angelina shared some of her favorite mantras next, as well as her philosophy on the importance of a positive mindset.
That's one of my mantras, no regrets. And the other favorite mantra I have is this too shall pass. Because in prison a long time ago, one of my ex-girlfriends, again, this was the first time I was in prison. I was in Sing Sing in 1985, and it was horrible. And so she brought me a Blue Mountain card. And although I don't remember what the gist of the card said, I'll never forget what the last four words said, this too shall pass. And so every time I find myself in a situation that I don't want to be in, a problem, an issue, I keep telling myself, this too shall pass. And a week will go by, a month will go by, or a year will go by, and that problem won't exist anymore. We're on to new challenges, new situations, new problems at a different time. And I go into problems with a positive mindset. And I look at every problem as not a deficit, but a potential asset. Like there is something to be gained here. There is something to learn here, be educated from, and make me a stronger, better person. And when we go into a negative situation with a negative mindset, we're going to come out more negative. The situation is probably going to be extended. But when we go into a negative situation with a positive attitude, first of all, we're looking at it with a completely different perspective. The situation itself is now becoming a potential asset instead of a potential deficit. And every time we do that, we become stronger people, more ready and equipped to take the world on, no matter what we're faced with.
Well, I love what you're saying here, because I can only be responsible for my own mindset. I can't be responsible for yours. I can only really control how I show up in any situation.
Right.
And so if I can show up as positively and lovingly and acceptingly and compassionately and generously as possible, then everything else should pretty much fall into place.
Right.
So I love what you're saying about that. I wanted to just ask you about Bernadette, because when we had talked before, you said it was a really tough thing and so unconditionally loving that Bernadette was willing to be there and actually inspire you to choose who you really are. How long had you guys been together when you started having these conversations?
Well, I mean, probably 2 years. I mean, I've known Bernadette before that because we used to work together in a drug rehab. I worked in maintenance, and she was a manager in the facility. So we knew each other for a while, but we've known each other probably 2 years before the conversation got serious about this side of me. And then when she said, "You need to embrace this," we both pretty much knew after I was deciding to move forward with this that we probably weren't going to be a couple anymore. And Bernadette is the kind of loving, selfless person that she wouldn't get in the way of my happiness, even though she knew it was going to mean her own unhappiness. That's how giving a person she is. And I don't know anybody that doesn't love her. She is just a totally down-to-earth, easygoing soul.
Yeah.
She really is.
So I want to spend a moment acknowledging her. What is it about her that really you'd like to share, to just share part of her heart and her spirit with us?
It's exactly her heart and her spirit is why I am so in love with her. And that's why I fell in love with her.
Yeah.
Because of her heart and her spirit. I met her. She had on jeans and boots, and she was down and dirty. And she's just a very, you get a very, very easygoing, loving, caring aura from her. She just gives out this very loving, compassionate sense about her. And she loves animals. I love animals. She was beautiful and just totally down to earth. And that's why I ended up loving her. It was actually because of animals in the beginning. That's who she is today. She's still the same loving, caring, compassionate, lively, loving spirit she's always been.
I love that. Thank you for sharing a little bit more about what it is about her that has you love her and has her be such an amazing person. Now, you live in Rosendale, New York, right?
Yeah.
And I think if anybody were driving through Rosendale, they would probably be able to pick your house out of the rest of the street because it's a pretty special house. It was written up in the news. Can you share a little bit about that story?
There are a couple things involved here. Prior to painting my house, I had the American flag up and the rainbow flag under the American flag. All right, because the American flag always is on top of any other flag. That's just the way it is. That's protocol. That's respect for America and what it stands for. So one day I got this piece of hate mail from somebody. They were not liking that I had the rainbow flag up, number one. And number two, they didn't like that it was under the American flag. So that set off something with somebody. And I started getting another one and another one. And then in June 16th of last year, you know, that's going to be Tuesday, I had one of my cats, Rambo. He was killed and he was cut in half.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
And the person actually that's been writing these letters took responsibility for doing that. Whether or not they did it, I don't know. And that inspired me to paint my house. Because now, if you don't have enough courage to come to my front door and tell me how you feel, then I have no other way of striking back and letting how I feel than doing what I did. So if you didn't like my flag, so I am going to let very clearly that I am totally against that, that hate is not allowed in this area, and I'm going to paint my house.
I'm laughing. I'm not laughing at you. Please don't be thinking that. I'm laughing because it's like you took the flag to a whole new level. Like, if you don't like my flag, I got a flag for you right here.
Yeah.
I just love how bold and courageous stand that is. So that's where my giggle came from.
Yeah. My neighbors, they all were outraged when I started getting these letters and stuff like
that.
Oh,
yeah. And
one of my neighbors spent her own money on getting these yard signs that said hate has no home here.
Mm.
We all put them up. My neighbors started putting up rainbow flags. So part of the way I am in life is that I am always looking to turn a negative into a positive. That's the way I operate. That's my mindset. I always look to make good out of the bad. And this was no less a case. I was going to take a negative situation and I was going to make it a positive one. And so I started to put the word out into the community, wherever I could, on the air, in the newspapers, what happened to me, why it happened to me, and what I'm going to do about it. And so let me tell you something. The day, September 6th of last year, there must have been about 250 people here from the community, from all over here, came to help paint my house the color of a rainbow. And it was an amazing day. I had two live bands here. The local home center here, Herzog's, they found out what happened to me. They contacted me, this the gentleman, Patrick, from the paint department at Herzog's. They donated all the paint for free.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
And it was just an amazing day. We had tons and tons of food. People were in good spirits. The news was here. And we painted my house the color of the rainbow.
And love, you know, it.
And so that was my stance against hatred and bigotry, was that you are not going to do this and keep me silent, because I am not the kind of a person that's going to stay silent. Yeah. I will never be silent where hatred and bigotry, racism, and any of that other stuff is involved. I am not that kind of a person, because it only inspires me to push back harder and harder, and as hard as I have to.
I love the sign, hate has no home here. I mean, I love a good turn of phrase, but the message, I think every house should have that.
Yeah.
Just to remind us that there's no space for hate. It doesn't get us anywhere. It's like you're talking about with the positive mindset. I'm only able to be responsible for myself.
Yeah.
Did they ever find the person who was doing this?
No, they're investigating. The state police are investigating. But a couple things here. It's kind of funny because Rosendale is a warm, loving, it's like a little Woodstock.
Yeah.
It's a great accepting place. I have a good relationship here with people, with the town, with the authorities. And I love life here. You will never run me out of this town.
Yeah.
And what's kind of ironic is that I do a lot of traveling. And I've been all over this country, and probably mostly in all conservative states. And I have never had a problem in any place I went. Never. Anytime I ran across people, and I'm a very social person. Every time I've ever come across people, we have nice conversations. They're very respectful, very courteous. And here is in my own town in Rosendale, I get some idiot that wants to spew their vile thoughts and feelings and stuff like that. But what? I made sure that it backfires on them. They could send me letters from now until the day they die, but they're only going to inspire me to push back. And what? If they get caught, and I hope they do, I will be at every one of their hearings in court, and I would want the judge to, one of the conditions of their sentencing would be to mandate them to sit down with me for 1 hour in a room with an officer, and let's have a conversation. Then after get to knowing me and hearing me, then you can hate me.
Mm.
But when you hate a person or a whole group of people without knowing them, that is the apex of what ignorance is. But ignorance is born out of expressing things about people and being uneducated about people and things that nothing about.
You're actually the chairwoman of the Mid-Hudson Valley Transgender Association.
Yeah.
So tell me about that organization. What is that about? What do you do as a group?
Well, we're a bunch of transgender people and some cross-dressers in there, people who, for whatever reason, can't live their lives fully as females. And we try to educate people who have family members, loved ones who are desiring to transition, who have transitioned, and who just want a smoother transition. So we take part in that. I was also part of the Ulster County Legislature in changing some of the discriminatory laws in the county. So there's a lot of advocacy work to be done with that. But my organization, we do whatever we can. We get involved in different things to support the transgender and LGBTQ communities.
That's awesome.
We add good things to society, to the planet. When anybody that is full of hatred and resentment, and that takes away from the humanity, they're the ones who are hurting us, not us. We just want to be happy and live our lives. We're not looking to take other people's happiness away.
Yeah, and I'm going to go so far as to say that you are a much more contributing member of society, being who you really are, than trying to pretend to be something that you're not.
Well, it took me a lot to get to this point in my life and to be the happy person I am today. And so I have a real problem with anybody or any government trying to suppress me further and send me back in time instead of supporting me. We're not hurting anybody. We just want to be who we are. And when I was in the Ulster County Legislature a couple of years ago, talking about discrimination in the county, why it's here, and when we had to stand up to speak against it, I told everybody in the legislative chamber and in the audience that I was embarrassed to even be here having this conversation. We're having a conversation whether or not there should be discriminatory practices against transgender people. That didn't even make sense to me. New York, in and of itself, has come a long way with anti-discrimination bills and pro-LGBTQ bills. And I'm a proud New Yorker. I'm a proud supporter of Governor Cuomo, of Michael Hine in the county here, of Pat Ryan, and everybody who plays a role in this. This is the New York State Senate, Jen Metzger, the Commissioner Fernandez, the Commissioner of Human Rights in New York. She wants to be here. I'm having another house painting in September. She reached out to me and she wants to be a part of it. I still have a lot of paint left over. So we're going to give it a second happy rainbow coat. We're going to have more bands here. We're going to have tons of food, tons of people. So we have to constantly take a stand. It doesn't end and it won't end, because hatred, racism, bigotry will always be around, but we'll be around too. And we're growing, because every person that stands up, another person stands up. When one person comes out, another person comes out. So when you come out and you stand up, you have a voice, a strong voice. And together, we have the strongest voices.
I love what you're saying about that somebody needs to stand up so other people feel the courage to stand up. Some people don't have the courage to stand up alone. So I acknowledge you for being that beacon of truth. And really, I believe that we can either be one way or the other. We can be love-based or fear-based. And so I just really always try to show up love-based. And I think that just is the beginning of all the goodness. And it's really when fear steps in. I mean, what is bigotry, racism? It's all fear of something we don't understand.
Right.
And so talking to somebody one-on-one, as opposed to making blanket assumptions about an entire group of people who are all individuals, that's a really, really good place to start.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, in that song Whitney Houston sang, learning to love yourself is the greatest love of all. It is, because once we learn, learn to love ourselves authentically, it changes everything. It changes our perspectives of ourselves. It changes our perspectives of the world. And the biggest thing that I got out of transitioning was that as children, we have no say-so as to what we psychologically and sometimes emotionally ingest, because we get all the stimulus and stimuli from the adults around us.
Right.
And we become products of what other people make us. When I transitioned, I was able to recreate my entire life all over again, not from what other people wanted me to be, but what I wanted me to be.
By choice, on purpose, yeah.
And so when we do love ourselves, love is the biggest combater of fear. And when we learn to love ourselves, we take a stand for that love. And we battle fear automatically, whether we like it or not. And then once we find other kindred spirits like that, we become a unit. And we become a stronger unit. And people want to be connected to that. And so let it be. I will be there for however I can, for whoever I can.
I love that. And I wanted to talk to you this month because it is Pride Month, so yes. I think it's perfect. And I really appreciate you being part of the Plate Story mosaic as somebody who is a proud transgender and can celebrate Pride Month with us in this show. So I wanted to turn the tables on you before we wrap up. Is there one question you'd like to ask me?
So what are you going to do for Pride Month?
What am I going to do for Pride Month? This? I thought about like, what could I do with COVID looming, not leaving my house in any way. And I thought, what's my platform? Well, really it's this podcast. So I wanted to bring someone on that could represent for Pride Month and share a story that really added to that conversation. And so you were a beautiful and wonderful addition to the plate story for that. So that's one thing. And I'm looking for other things that I can do. So do you have any ideas with everybody being in the house and not showing up in groups as much as they can avoid it?
Well, there's still lots and lots of things to get involved in, you know, Zoom-wise, Facebook. There are safe ways to gather still. I mean, I generally love to go to New York City for the Pride Parade. Have you ever been there?
Yes, I have been there. Oh, it's amazing.
There is nothing like it.
And it's canceled, though, this year, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I get into the parade. And I'll tell you, my spirit is so elevated. There's nothing like Pride Parade in New York City.
Yeah.
It's an amazing experience. And it just feels good to be there with all my people.
Yeah.
You know, and the supporters and stuff like that. I mean, there's tens and tens and tens of thousands of people.
It's definitely something to experience for sure and to be part of.
Historic.
Yeah.
It really is. And to be trans and proud today, it's a great experience because, like I said, the more people that come out, the more people that come out.
That's right. I love that.
It's a good time to be trans.
I think that's a great thing to end on. It's a good time to be trans.
It is.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I want to thank you, Angelina, so much for being part of Plate Story. It's been wonderful to have you here. And definitely we'll be following your journey. And your rainbow house painting sounds like a ton of fun. I'll make sure to put links to all your stuff online so people can come and support the same conversations that you advocating for.
Well, listen, thank you so much for having me. It's been a wonderful pleasure and experience.
Good.
I have a lot of gratitude for you choosing me for this, especially during this month.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. Please subscribe to Trista's Plate Story Podcast to get the story behind all those vanity plates driving with you on the road. And if you would like to nominate the owner of a license plate, including you, or visit any of our partners and sponsors, come see us at platestory.com. That's PL8story.com and give us the details. If you enjoyed this episode, please drop a review and give us a share. I'm Trista Polo, wishing you well on the road to your next adventure.